Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
Thank you for joining us. This is Community-Driven Growth in SaaS Volume 2. And now with some panelist introductions.
Hi, everyone. My name is Casey Baldwin. I am the Director of Marketing and Platform here at Bring Ruckus. So thank you all for joining us. I've kind of like built my career at the intersection of community and marketing. I started as a community manager, kind of like shifted more into the marketing side, and then found that community and relationships are really what matter most to me. And so I've been able to kind of sneak my way back a little bit. And I'm grateful to be at Bring Ruckus, where among other things, I'm able to host really wonderful conversations like this with subject matter experts like the ones that we have before us. So with that, I will pass the mic.
Hi, everybody. I'm Laura Cascarelli. I'm an account executive at HireLogic. I took a circular path to this direction. Nobody goes to college to become a community manager. I was a German major. I was a science teacher. And then I was running a program supporting teachers all across the DC region. And I just had a problem to solve, which is that I had no way to connect them in between our workshops and with our partners. And that's sort of the first time that I built an online community completely by accident. And so I made a lot of mistakes. I had no idea what I was doing. I picked the wrong tool. I picked a better tool. And I learned a lot along the way. And I worked at LearnZillion. I built our national network of teachers. And I went to Osmosis, which Victoria took over, which is our medical student community. And then I came over to HireLogic about 3 years ago. And so I was on the consulting side for my first 3 years here, helping associations and nonprofits and corporations either launch communities or refresh and revive them. And I love that you can solve so many different challenges with so many business models with community. And then they couldn't get me off the phone. I love talking about community so much. I moved into a sales role in January. So now I get to help really small associations, really small nonprofits answer some of these bigger questions, which is how do we engage our audiences? How do we build these relationships? And how do we do that at scale with a small team?
Hi, everyone. I am Carrie Williams. I'm currently the manager of community strategy and engagement for Workday. Prior to that, I have been around a few different places. I have worked in support enterprise communities. I have launched startup communities. I worked for the platform side for a few years, doing best practices and consulting, launching new customers there. I've led teams. I've been a one-man show. I feel like I've pretty well done it all when it comes to community, at least dipped my toe in it anyway. And I'm excited to be here today and talking to you guys about community growth in SaaS.
Hello, hello. I am Victoria Cumberbatch. Please call me Vicky V, anything other than Victoria, but got to introduce yourself that way. You know what I mean? Currently, I'm a community consultant and a mentor for those breaking into the community industry from either another industry or for the first time in the workforce. It's really fun to mentor. So, side note. Recently, I was community manager at Osmosis. As Laura very well knows, it's a health education startup with a micro community of international medical students, was completely remote. And before that, I was a program leader for a cohort at Remote Year. So that was completely in person and a lot of togetherness. So I think between those two, lots of years were just in a very few in learnings. Now I'm just living full time in my van, wandering the country in constant search of Wi-Fi. I'm very grateful to be on this panel with these wonderful, wonderful thought leaders. So that's all I got.
Hi, everyone. I'm Melanie Bond. I'm currently the director of community at Nanit. I started off my career in customer success and then kind of fell into community, as a lot of people do, about 6 years ago. And I had the opportunity to help build a community consulting team at HireLogic. And it really gave me the opportunity to work with so many different types of communities, large, small, all different types of organizations. And it really opened my eyes to not only the power of community, but really getting to understand why people want to build community and how we can solve really big problems with a community, which I think is so incredible. And then back in February, I joined Nanit to help them launch their very first community, which we launched at the end of June.
Exciting. Congratulations. Thank you all for introducing yourselves and for being here. I wanted to kick off with a question that we've gotten like a few different times from our community, including in our panel 2 weeks ago. But I think I'm kind of getting the idea that there's a lot of people who are feeling the need to defend the work that you do in community management, right? And the impact that it might have on the organization. And so this question is just, what is your elevator pitch to explain why this is important to other teams or to other stakeholders? And so I don't know if anybody has something that comes to mind right off the bat.
So I think for this, what I always do when I'm having these types of conversations is I really want to tailor it to whoever I'm speaking to. So the number one thing is identifying what challenges they have in their day-to-day jobs and how community can help solve for that. So if you really work on building the relationship with them first and then speaking to their problems and how community can really help, I think that's going to really get you over the hump initially and kind of get their initial buy-in. And then I think the next piece of that is whenever you're building a community, the most important thing is that the goals and the KPIs that you're setting for your community are tying back to your organizational goals. They cannot be siloed. They can't just be based on engagement and a certain amount of posts. Those things have to actually mean something. And that doesn't mean you have to have ROI within the first amount of months or, you know, weeks or whatever that might be, but you really have to show a long-term plan of how it's going to impact the overall business goals. If you can't do that, then I think that's where you struggle with people not being bought in because they're not getting the impact. They're not seeing how, you know, what's in it for them.
To get a little bit more clarity there, do you have like a standard timeline that you would recommend for a new community to be actually looking to be able to measure that ROI?
So I think you always want to be measuring KPIs from the beginning. And then you kind of, I always think of this as more of a tiered approach. So phase one, these are our KPIs, and this is how we know we're tracking in the direction that we want to be tracking. And then as time goes on, you're going to update and change those KPIs. So in the beginning, you're probably going to be focusing on three core things as they relate back to your organizational goals. And then as your community continues to grow and scale, there are more things that you can kind of work into that to help prove the ROI. But out of the bat, right, especially with support communities, it's not going to happen overnight where you're going to see this huge impact on ticket deflection. But what are the really quick wins that you can pull out and highlight, especially to someone in your support team, for example, to show them, hey, like there's light at the end of the tunnel. Look at this really awesome thread where a customer came in and answered our other customer's question, and we're getting a lot of great feedback and views on this thread. This is what we want to do and what we're going to continue to scale and grow. So I think it's finding those little bits that you can kind of highlight and tell the story around until you can get to the point where you have super impactful metrics where you can say, hey, our community saves us X amount of dollars from a ticket perspective.
Love that.
I'm in sales now. So I'm right. Like I'm literally selling a community, but if I'm pitching something, I'm not doing my job right. And so I think I had an interaction yesterday with someone saying, you should sell it this way. You should try to sell it to me. I'm like, well, no, that's not really, my job is to listen. My job is to listen and understand. And then I can make my recommendations. And typically my first interactions with someone that I'm working with is, tell me about your role. Tell me about your role at the company. What are you trying to achieve? How's your business doing? What are you trying to accomplish as a business? What's your departmental goals for this year? And then from there, I can basically solve any problem with community. There's so many problems that can be solved with community, but I'm not going to lead with that pitch until I can understand the problem. So I think that begins with whatever role you're playing in this, whether you're a community manager or you're a director of customer success or you're in sales or you're in product. There's no pitch to begin with. The pitch should be listening first and taking really more of a servant leadership approach to seeking to understand the business goals. And then you're not going to have a problem matching that back to the community and providing the value, but you have to understand the problem that you're solving first.
Yeah, I think to that point, you know, if you're thinking about, if you take the pitch part out of it, I liken it to how do you tell the story, right? And Melanie mentioned this as well. It is about telling a story that your audience can relate to no matter who they are, no matter where they are. For example, one of the things I did at a previous company was told this story of this guy named Ted who, you know, just showed up, he searched the answer to his question, he landed on our community. And it just kind of like followed all of the little touch points that were possible from in the community and like ended with him retiring, but still coming back to the community and like his whole life. And he found his wife and like you paint this picture of these are the amazing things that could happen. And think about how these types of things could weave into your business objectives and your touch points on a daily basis with our customers. So also having that business piece in back of our minds for the right audience, but then for me, that general audience was actually kind of our whole company, to be honest. They just, you know, it was bringing them along for the ride and getting them excited about community.
Is that a true story? Someone found their wife?
No. Oh, actually, I think it was on the Funko documentary about the, it mentions their community, and they actually, like, I think that was one of the ones that was true, that they did meet their wife or something on it.
That's very cool. In the comment section. Amazing. What about you, Vicky? Any thoughts here?
Yeah, I have thoughts. Something that I was just going to say is to bring it down to how to do this, because I'm very, let's write the notes down. You know what I mean? So something that I would follow that I think takes a little bit from what everyone just mentioned is the SPACE method. So that literally stands for support team, product team, acquisition team, content marketing team, and engagement. And in that, I would have those, that acronym out, and underneath left side, I would write down what I need from the community in this area. What do I need from my support team to make this job easier? And on the right side of the same thing, I would have how this thing I need helps the support team as well. And that's what I would share with each of the teams. Look, I need this, but me needing this gives you this. And I think back to Melanie's original point of how is this mutually beneficial? How are you giving back to the team so that they have some skin in the game? Why would they want to help? Speak in their language, right? Which goes along with what Laura and Carrie also said. So that's the way I literally put it down. And I just wanted to share that. SPACE method. I think you can probably find it on the Googs, but if you don't use it,
that's a classic. I use that. I love SPACE. I used that when I didn't know what I was doing. And I was like,
right.
It's such a helpful, if you don't know where to get started, that was the first tool that I used. And I was reconnecting with the director of customer success I worked with many years ago at the time. And he was like, SPACE is that was the thing. Cause that helped him understand. And I had no other way of communicating it. So I know SPACE is classic. Go back to it. That's some good stuff.
I love all of that. And one of the things that I'm hearing kind of as a theme is just the impact of the qualitative stories that can be shared with other stakeholders as well. In specific instances, obviously the metrics are great when they're there, but if you can really paint like a picture of one person who, you know, their experience with the product completely shifted after they interacted with the content or interacted with the community, right? Like that's the type of thing that stakeholders can really hold on to and share. Yeah, that's super compelling. How do you guys balance community, marketing, and product need? Anyone have any thoughts?
Harry? Very carefully. Very, very carefully. I'm going to assume in this instance that community is kind of referring to users and customers in general. And typically, my approach is if you start with the end and you start with the customer in mind, the balancing of the needs becomes easier. Because whatever you're trying to achieve with community or with marketing or with product, as long as you can bring it back to the customer and their how it serves their needs, then it should also serve the business's needs as well. Granted, I know there's going to be instances where products will say, well, I need it to do this and I want you to do that and we can't do that. But again, I think it is that consistent messaging of why are we doing this? What's the strategy? How are we measuring? And what's the benefit to the end user at the end of the day?
I totally agree. And I think it also goes back to when you work in this field, one of the most important things is building relationships. And that's not only with your community members, but that's with everyone that you work with internally. And you really need to have great relationships with every single stakeholder. You should really know everyone who's involved in the community at any level so that they trust you. So that way, if someone on a team comes and wants to do something in the community that might not really align with the strategy and isn't going to benefit your customers at the end of the day, you can have an open and honest conversation about it. And then they're going to trust you that like you're making the right decision, even if it's not exactly what they want to do. And I feel like I've come across this so much, particularly with a marketing department or sometimes a sales department, where they see this community and they're like, oh my gosh, all of our customers are in there. This is a great channel for us to blast things out to them. And you're like, whoa, we can't do that. So if you don't have the relationship there, it's going to be a much more contentious conversation. But if you've built a level of trust with them first, then you can really talk through here's why we're not going to do that, but here's what we can do. And here's how we can really leverage this group of people to help you meet your needs at the end of the day. So I think it kind of goes back to what we just talked about in the question before. It's how do you align your strategy to their goals, their challenges, and solve problems for them? And then they're going to be much more on board. It's going to be easier for you.
Something you said, but yeah, this idea of you have to say no, right? Like you're kind of like the referee blocking people, but then you have this opportunity, right? You don't want to alienate your marketing person or alienate your product person. It's an incredible channel. But with something that I found too, it's still so rare, right? It's rare to have a community, but it's even more rare to have marketing and product leaders who have previous experience with communities too. So you still have to do, all right, lots of nodding, right? So you still have to do a lot of education there internally, like Mel is saying, build those relationships, build that trust, do that learning, because you are at some point, you're going to have to say no, you're going to have to set those expectations and boundaries, but you also don't want to alienate them too and make them think that they are not really going to get something out of that community. I'm trying to think of an example of when I've experienced that, of being able to walk into a community with someone who's already had community experience on the marketing or product side. That just remains, maybe I'll open that up to the group. That's so, so rare to have someone who already knows how these operations should be running and what these workflows really should be looking like.
Laura, yes.
Well, operations. I was like, Victoria.
So it's possible that I'm a do the most. I'm saying it's possible because I'm being kind to myself, but I do the most. And something that I did that I really do suggest is, especially if you have people in your marketing, product, and many other teams that you may work with that haven't worked with community, is to create the expectation list. This was something I got for a remote year. Set the expectations. I would set the expectations of what the community members can expect from team, and what team can expect from community. So to your point of sales team wants to be in the channel where all the community members are, take. No, that's not allowed. And here are the reasons why. And we're going to discuss them so that you understand. And I only say it's do the most because I did have standing calls with each of these teams. It wasn't on a weekly or a monthly basis. Maybe it was on a quarterly basis. But we just discussed like, okay, what is your team expecting? And what are we expecting of you? And let's get on the same page. And we did this, you know, semi-frequently. And I really suggest that that's a really great place to start, to an earlier point of list seeking to understand first and understand what the teams are seeking so that you can provide that.
You know, I love that point around expectation setting. And so like we've all mentioned, a lot of times community is brand new to people, especially your colleagues. So if you're not clear with them in the beginning, what the expectations are, that's our fault as the community manager. We need to set those really clearly. And something that has worked really well for me in the past is specifically with the staff that, or your colleagues or employees that are going to engage in the community in any capacity, having a rules of engagement document. Everything's documented and explaining why. So why you don't go in there and respond to every single post and what the ideal engagement would look like and kind of the ratio between what we want to be customer driven versus what's going to be employee driven, when to escalate, having all of that documented and then talking through it with everyone so everyone's on the same page is so incredibly helpful.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think I have two thoughts on this that go a little bit deeper even of, you know, part of this isn't just how you manage or you balance community marketing and product, it's really your entire internal communication strategy of how do you educate, how do you build awareness, how do you incorporate the needs of different business units within your plans and what you're doing. And one thing that, you know, from my consulting days, I always found it interesting because it's such a blind spot from the outside. When you see the community and you see all the posts and you see all the programs and all the cool things going on, you have no insight into how much work goes into the back end of building those relationships internally and how many meetings and how many standups you're talking to people, and you're always constantly kind of beating that drum. And I think that even to the elevator pitch question, it's not a pitch, it's an awfully long elevator ride. you're constantly beating that drum and you need to be continuing to build those relationships and having that messaging on a regular cadence to make sure that you're getting that across. And the second thing I was thinking about is really trying to make sure it's positioned as you're all on the same team. They may have needs and things that they want done. So it's a matter of how do you work with them to do something that helps achieve the business need. For instance, if they have a very valid business need, they say, okay, well, you know, we've got this new product coming. We want to promote it. How can we use community? You know, I think it's our jobs as the internal management team to help come up with ways to do that. I mean, it's part of the business's success that we help support those things. So it's being open to new solutions and open to new ideas and collaborating with other departments that's important as well.
Absolutely. Is there a piece where it's like, and maybe I'm just too big a fan of community, but is there a piece where it's just like, they don't need to be balanced. Community needs need to be prioritized because a world in which marketing and product needs challenge or like take away from the needs of the community, there are real consequences to that, right? Like if you're losing trust, if you're losing engagement long-term, that's gonna show up in ways that will be upsetting to the marketing and product teams as well. Am I being too bold?
I think you're right. That's something I was thinking kind of along with that. It was something I had no idea what I was doing, right, when I started this. And so I had some really, really great advice from our VP of marketing. This was at Lord Zillion. And she said, you need to balance the gives with the asks. And that's something that I still think about that a lot. And I think that's a really great rule. And so the at rate, I'm asking for feature you in a story. I'm asking to for product feedback. I'm asking for this post. I'm asking for you to take this survey. I'm making all these asks of you, but what am I giving back? And that's just sort of a gut check and doesn't have to be perfectly 50-50, but I always want to think about that. If I am making an ask, well, let me do a spotlight here too. Gives can mean a lot of different things. I have a lot to say about intrinsic versus extrinsic rewards, but the goal at the principle of that is to really make sure that you're going to have those asks coming in for marketing and product. You can be the air traffic controller, but then you need to be probably the one doing that giving back too, and be the one sort of balancing and kind of keeping that in mind to make sure that the equilibrium doesn't get out of balance.
Definitely. That's a great point.
AC, to your earlier note before the call, the wave, I think that's how I'd look at that. Sometimes there needs to be balance and other times there needs to be complete and utter prioritization of community. And that goes in waves. So I don't know if that can be seen as balance in a meta way, but
sure.
That, you know what I mean?
Love it. Okay. Do you guys have best practices that you can share for user and product feedback groups?
I've struggled with this. Like, I think I've never gotten this right, to be totally honest. And I think I'll just put this out there. What I struggled with is bite size. You know, you want deep feedback that takes time. Do we do it as a group on a Zoom? Do we do one-on-one? Do I get you alone with the product manager? Is that fun for you? You know, is it just on the portal? Is it just on the community? I mean, how much interaction do we have? I think I've tried every possible variation of this, and I feel like I've never really quite gotten it right. And I think for me, the most important piece has always been when this works, they see the result of their actions. And I think that's the core thing that I always want to come back to, but the how we get there is something that I've always struggled with. So I'll open that up. If anybody's really gotten this right, I want to know about it.
So I don't know that I've ever gotten it right either, but I also read this question a little bit, maybe different in that it was user groups, possibly user/product feedback. So I kind of framed my answer and could apply to both, I suppose. But even if we don't know if we're getting it fully right, even if we're going to try, these are a few things I would recommend you start with. And it goes along with the theme of what we've been talking about earlier around setting expectations. I think that is the number one step when we're launching either a user group or a product feedback group, that people who are participating understand fully what the impacts of their participation might or may not be. Being constantly clear about that and maybe needing to redirect people. You know, people are getting upset, something's not happening. They told you an idea, you didn't do it. How do you make sure that they're regularly communicated with? The second one is making sure that you're considering the audience properly. I was reading The Art of Gathering recently. I don't know if you guys have checked that one out. I love it. And I love how, you know, she really stresses the idea of making sure you have the right people at your gathering and not just the easiest list, but how do we target and make sure that you have the right people to get the right combinations of feedback that you're looking for. And then the last piece I would say is just make sure you have some success metrics, that you know what you're trying to achieve, what's the outcome that you're working towards with this product feedback or with this user group. Because if you don't know what you're actually working towards, then there's no way to measure whether or not it's actually working for you. So maybe I just haven't had really good success metrics, Laura, and maybe that's why. I don't know if it's been successful or not, but those would be my kind of suggestions in terms of launching something for product feedback or user groups.
Carrie, I love your second point around making sure that you have the right people at the gathering. And I think this is where people go wrong. in a lot of ways with community, but specifically with product feedback groups, I think it's really easy for us to say, okay, let's just invite our customers who love us to get feedback, or the customers that we know really well. And I think when you're thinking about creating these types of groups, it's an opportunity, yes, to invite the people that you've worked with very closely and have a great relationship with your organization, but it's also a time to invite people in who have a lot of feedback for you, who maybe don't love your product that much right now, or have a lot of ideas. Maybe they're just not voicing them in the way that you'd like them to, but this really gives them an opportunity to be heard. And then also interface with customers who are your. And then also not forgetting the people that fall in the middle who use your product, right? You're able to see that through your CRM or wherever you're tracking that data, but you don't talk to as much. This is a really great opportunity to invite some of those people in. And I think when you only lean on a specific subset of your customer base, you're really missing out on so much great intel that you wouldn't have otherwise. So I think that's really important when it comes to product feedback groups.
Carrie, I also really like what you said about just aligning on expectations, which is, again, another theme that I'm seeing in lots of different relationships that need to be managed in these roles. But I think it would be so easy, obviously, to go and collect all of this feedback with the intention of just like better understanding the experience, right? And have the participants in those conversations and your community members really feel like frustrated the next week to not see their feedback implemented in the product. And so I think just level setting as with probably more clarity than we would ever assume is necessary to make sure that all of the people involved have the same expectations is really powerful advice.
Yeah, we were all new to tech at some point, right? And so I think one of my learning curves was understanding how long it takes to move through the product development cycle. And so I had to learn that, and I have to remember my audience needs to learn that too. It might take a year. It might take 5 years. It seems so simple, right? As someone who's outside of the product team, that it's just technology. You can just build this thing. How hard is that? But it's much more complicated than that. And so I think something even that I have found helpful is explaining, well, what does it mean to do product development? What is a product roadmap? People don't know that. And so I think even if we've been in tech for a long time, I have to kind of put on that hat of like fresh eyes and just saying, well, they don't know how products are developed necessarily. I have to remember that. And that also helps with setting expectations too.
100%.
I think that also goes for community itself and feedback of helping people to understand that when they give us feedback about the community, community in itself is a product. And it takes us time to go through and analyze and understand, you know, what everyone's feeling and how things are going. So I think that the product development piece is really important for setting expectations as well, no matter what product we're working on.
Absolutely. So what platforms and tactics have been most effective in getting your customers talking to each other?
One of my faves. I think tactics are a bit more important than platform, to be frank. I think on any platform, even in the real world, these tactics can work. Rituals, 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 rituals. Engagement challenges, which is something that I started to do with Osmosis, and it was on a monthly basis. And that transitioned into themed months, things that community members looked toward. And it sounds like it could be easy. You could just sit down and brainstorm and figure out, oh, we'll have a referral challenge. That's easy. It's win for us and like semi, not really that much of a win for them unless they get so many referrals and they get this thing that they never achieve. But sitting down with those other teams and getting other people's brains with you to figure out ways of engagement, because you never know, people are onions, they're multi-layered. They may know more than just their product arena. And also the intrinsic and extrinsic point that Laura noted earlier. If you are an extrovert and you are intrinsically motivated, you're naturally going to brainstorm ideas for yourself and you are going to add those. And they are going to be only for maybe a quarter to a half of your community that they'll engage with those things in because they are not like you. So to have the opportunity to sit down and brainstorm these sort of things with other team members, particularly those that are different than you, is super valuable. So I say tactics get your customers talking organically.
I completely agree. I think this also goes back to your strategic planning. So if you have the opportunity to be a part of the planning prior to the launch, don't over-segment your community. And I feel like all of us community professionals use this analogy of like when you go to a party and there's not a lot of people there, everyone hangs out in the kitchen, right? And then as more people arrive, you can break out. Some people might go outside. Some people are going to go to the living room because there's enough people to do that and there's enough conversation happening. And same with community. When you launch a community, if you have all of these different groups and places for people to go, it's too much. They don't know where to post. They get confused. And then the odds of them posting a question is very low. If they do, the odds of someone actually answering it is even lower. And that's horrible. So in terms of tactics, when you launch, don't over-segment your community. Talk to your community members, right? Make sure that you're building a framework that makes sense for them in terms of how you're going to structure your community. And then after the community launches, when someone posts organically, really work hard to make sure they get answers to their questions, because that's going to kill your engagement. I've seen it where people will go in and post questions and then just crickets, nobody's answering. And so it's great that you're getting that organic question, but you really need people to come in and reply. So in the beginning, that's really like what our job is as a community manager. We're making connections behind the scene. We're emailing people, showing them the question, asking them to chime in and kind of nudging that in the beginning before it really becomes completely organic and people are just answering questions and starting their own discussions on their own.
I think too, you touched on it a little bit, but it's about having a programmatic approach to it, wherein you are building relationships with people as they come into the community and you're getting to know them from day one as best you can. And as those relationships evolve, that becomes, you know, potentially the baseline for your super user recognition, whatever you want to call it, program, which for me has always been the crux of success for community is, you know, having a strong relationship with a core group of people that can be those kind of conversation kickstarters for me, that can go out and ask a question or help answer a question. And I mean, it obviously depends on where you are within your kind of community journey. But I think even when I've launched communities, there's always still been a good handful of folks that you could still identify, even if it's only five people. That's really all you need to start that snowball going. And once you can get those people highly engaged, then the rest start to come along. But again, it goes back to your, I think Melanie mentioned this earlier, it takes time. Like that's not happening overnight. So it is something that needs to be sustained and focused on as a program.
And just to clarify for anybody who might not like have that intuitive kind of like instinct, what are you looking for to pinpoint those people? I don't know if that ties into like the intrinsic, extrinsic motivation conversation that's coming up as well. But yeah, how do you sense out where those kind of like that core group that you're going to start with is, and how do you engage them when you do, or are they already so engaged that that's like kind of happens on its own?
So I've always found those people a couple different ways. One, if I'm launching the community from scratch, they're typically the people that will respond to surveys in the beginning. Like they'll talk to me on the phone. They're giving me really great feedback. So I'm building that relationship kind of before the community even launches, and they're really bought in and excited. And so then I just carry that relationship through. Also prior to launch, if you're doing any sort of soft launch, beta launch, the people who are raising their hand for that type of activity, those can really turn into your ambassadors or whatever you decide to call them. And then I would say if you have a community that you've inherited, maybe you haven't been there since launch, just take a look at who's logging in, who's posting a lot, and then reaching out to them and just building relationships with them. So they do kind of find their way to the surface. Like you can pretty much pick them out of the crowd and you know who they are. It's just you have to spend the time cultivating the relationship with them before you can just start asking them to do stuff for you.
I'll call them warm people. You can find warm people anywhere. Yeah. And so these are the people I used to get people on the phone or do the surveys. But even if you don't have that level, like I'm just seeing the super, super scrappy stuff. Even if just look at who's opening your emails. Every organization sending emails. So who's opening them pretty regularly? Who's using your product? Just start there. And that's enough of a layer of general interest and engagement to at least build the base of trust off of. And then something else I want to come back to with the organic stuff is it's just gratitude and thanking people. And that's something that it's worth it to go slow is to go fast later on and just taking that time. If someone is a unicorn and posts organically, that's incredible. You would be between 1 and 10% chance of that happening at all. thank that person, make it personal, do that extra work. If somebody responds, thank that person. So that's a role that you can play. And it just becomes so critical to build those relationships and trust too. And just take the moment to express that appreciation. That just goes a really long way. And I actually don't see I see everyone here is doing that. I don't see a lot of community managers really taking the time, especially in the early days, to slow it down and really, really do the thank yous that they need to do to keep building that movement.
I'll also note, one, it's hard, especially if you're a team of one, to have that also in mind. But that singular thing can have like voluminous return if you are just showing your gratitude, maybe more so than all the things you're working on throughout your day. But I was just going to say that a community I'm really impressed with that does both the gratitude and helping to elicit more organic response is Public App. It's a finance app. I'm into that. And what I see, I think that there's three people in the community team because I always see them lurking and they're involved in the communication on their app so granularly. And if a community member is like clearly new and asks, well, how does so-and-so know how to do such and such? The community manager will maybe wait like an hour or so and then respond with a tag of another community member that clearly has been talking about this particular topic. So now you're getting kind of a two for one here. You're getting you two to communicate. I'm helping elicit this engagement. And I'm also really thankful. So I've been really impressed with them. If anybody just wants to like audit some, that's a great one.
That's awesome. One of my friends just joined the team at Public, so I'm going to have to tell her like everybody's hyping you guys. But that's awesome that they're handling that so well. It seems like they're growing an awesome team. What is ahead for you guys? Does anybody have any specific goals that they are trying to bring to fruition in 2022? Or are you seeing things overall that like just community trends that you think people will be working towards next year? Especially like interested if there's been any COVID impact you're seeing as we enter our junior year of the pandemic.
I think for me, I'm not directly managing a community right now. So I've sort of channeled that energy and enthusiasm into LinkedIn. And I think for me, what I've started doing career talks for people in community and just doing that, trying to do that once a month and just spotlight other people and do more of this and do more of telling people's stories and doing the sharing. We don't have to wait to be each other's audiences and elevate each other and tell each other's stories. And I think there's still so much ahead of us in terms of building a movement behind us for future career. People still don't really know what this is. And so I think there's so much here. There's so many interesting stories and everyone has a fascinating story to tell about how they kind of ended up in this world. And so for me, that's just my goal. That's more my kind of hobby project that I've honestly just had a total blast doing and getting to know people that I followed for a long time and been a bit of a fangirl and just kind of creating that space to do more storytelling within the community spaces. That's my goal. And I want to keep that going for next year.
So the first thing I'll say, Laura, is you're not alone in that, I don't think. Even as someone who's been in this industry for a pretty long time comparatively, I only just recently actually started kind of taking it seriously in terms of reaching out to other people and feeling like, wait a minute, this is a legit profession and I totally want to talk to Erica Kuhl and I totally fangirled Holly Firestone, right? And, you know, these are the people that I've been doing this with, a rock star. So totally not alone in that. And I've started doing that in the last year as well. And in terms of next year and what it looks like, my big thing, and Victoria kind of mentioned, sorry, Vic mentioned this as well, is mentoring my team. My team's going to be growing more. It already has grown from a zero. We did not exist as a community engagement team previously before I started. And we're going to be continuing to grow for next year. And not just in headcount, but also in hopefully their skills and their development and mentoring them and getting them involved in different organizations and all kinds of webinars and helping them learn and be better community managers as well. So I'm super pumped to see where they go.
I'm also not overseeing a community directly at the moment, but I am really interested in doing more mentorship that is deeply fulfilling and writing more. I want to write more about community on my blog. You know, are people reading it? Uncertain, but
I read. I was enjoyed say, I love your writing. I love it. But well, you should do more. I read it. I read it. I love it.
Amazing. Okay, cool. Let's jump to the next one. How do you guys see community and sales going hand in hand?
I feel like this question was made for Laura.
It is.
I think it goes, I would say there's, this can be the kind of marketing question again too. Like it needs to begin with the customer experience. I'm a customer experience person first. And so ideally you are delivering this incredible customer experience. Your customers are satisfied. They're renewing. They're coming back to you. The referrals will come. I know, Victoria, I think we're talking about a similar referral challenge that we both had to manage before. You can't lead with referrals and asking people for referrals if you're not delivering an incredible customer experience. And so it puts the community manager in a very difficult situation. I believe Victoria and I were in the same difficult situation. So in terms of helping sales, though, ideally, then there is a process and a pipeline to channel that incredibly positive energy, that incredibly positive experience. I'm a very operations process person in this, too. And so ideally, there is that pipeline that you're building coupled with the actual data infrastructure, probably on Salesforce somewhere, where you can capture the activity, your biggest fans, whether it's from Gainsight surveys or community engagement, actual literal activity in the community, and then channeling that forward. And so this can also impact the structure of the community. Is it open to the public for lead generation or not? What do we, how do we engage with prospects in our community? Where does that funnel go to? So I think there's a lot of complexity here, but for me at the core, it really always comes back to the customer experience. We have to deliver that first before we can even think about referrals and marketing and sales in this too.
I completely agree with you, Laura. And I think, yeah, this goes back to, you know, the strategy of your community and how you're looking to scale. And when you think about building a community that's completely open, there's a ton of benefit there. There's also some cons to it as well. So when you think about making sure that you are building a really trustworthy core of a community first for your customers, and then it can really turn into an acquisition tool. Absolutely. But I think where people get this wrong is that they focus too much on the acquisition piece to start, and they don't focus on building a really strong, trusted community foundation for their customers, right? We're like, we have to give to our customers first before we can just start taking from them and asking for them. So we need to start thinking about how this community can solve problems, right? What type of content are we giving them? What type of resources, expert access, whatever it might be that is really going to be compelling and set your community apart is incredibly important to build first, and then you can really move into a place where your community can be a really great acquisition tool.
I think this also ties in with some of the discussions we had earlier as well, because it comes down to messaging as well. I think there's an element of training and education that goes into how do your salespeople talk about your community. There is an opportunity for sale for the community to be a value add in the sales cycle of being able to say, look, we have this amazing community that is there for you and supports you. And we've done this and we've done that. I mean, you know, we already mentioned Salesforce, so I'll say them again, but I think everyone would agree that their community is a value add when it comes to a sales environment. And, you know, that's not in the cards for everyone, but certainly even if it's a small community, it can still be very intimate and can still make a difference in sharing with it, with your customer base as an extra, hey, when you're onboarding, if you have a question, there's this great community that's here to support you. Having use case studies of showing kind of how people have gone through implementation and how community can support that initial sales cycle and onboarding process.
Yeah, that's a huge one from Laura, the way you were talking about it earlier. It seemed like community is a core part of your pitch. And if it, at least if you pick up that in the listening part of the call, that it would be a compelling piece of the value for the person on the other end. So that definitely resonates. And then we can jump to our last question, which I think really ties in the answer that you guys were thinking of, or I'm assuming it's going to be a similar answer. But how much is too much to ask from your customers if we're asking for case studies, speaking? I don't know what CABS stands for, but if somebody wants to let me know, how do we know when we've gone from partner to pest? So I'm assuming that to a certain extent, if you're providing enough value and giving enough, then it's about balancing the giving and asks. Customer advisory boards. There we go.
I feel like everybody will be nodding a lot. So pressure's on. But Laura said earlier, you know, think of it this way, two ears, one mouth, two gives, one ask. That's how I have consistently tried to formulate it. If I want something from my community, I want you to complete this survey by this date. What two things will they want? And because I'm on the intrinsic, extrinsic tip, I try to think of one that's for one side and one that's for the other side. So at least I have a majority of people possibly interested in what I'm saying. This has worked well in the communities that I've been in. So I like to keep it.
I think for me, it goes back to similar conversations, similar threads around building relationships and making sure that you have a pretty deep bench with that. I think there you need to be open-minded to bringing in new customer feedback, new customer voices, and making sure that you're not re-asking the same people all the time. That can get a little tedious and it can obviously start to look like there isn't anyone else to come out and talk on your behalf. So there's that aspect too. And then I'm going to jump on the same, you know, intrinsic and extrinsic motivations train as everybody else here. I think you have to make sure you're saying thank you and you're showing appreciation. And I always position it as, you know, if you're sending swag or you're sending something or you're saying anything, it should always be a thank you. It's not meant to be an incentive. It's not meant to, hey, if you do this for us, we'll do that. It's not a transaction. It should be a relationship between two people or an organization and people, I guess.
I would say that the mistakes I've made here, especially at early stage startups, were not documenting enough. It was all very casual and kind of informal of like, let's get so-and-so. I heard this story. Let's do this thing. Right. And then, you know, 3 years goes by and you have no right. You're like, wait, how many times have we tapped them? And it kind of becomes this flabbergasting moment. Right? So that's my sort of lesson learned. Just document it. Start, just put in a spreadsheet, put in a Google spreadsheet, start to keep track earlier rather than later. It doesn't have to be elaborate. But when you do grow as a company and you do have this really complex sales force and thousands of customers, ideally, you have some records to go back to that will start to flag this problem a little bit earlier in the process too. And then you can build towards the longer term solutions of having all of this documented in Salesforce or tracked some way. But the other piece of this from the more human side of things, the less operation side of things is understanding. Actually, this is, I'm curious given your audiences, if you guys have encountered this, but something I encountered that this is probably because I worked with a lot of teacher communities, but almost an imposter syndrome. They didn't think that they were worthy of being featured, or they didn't think there was something special there, or they didn't think like these numbers aren't enough. There's not that much. I would say, no, but this is amazing. You're doing amazing. We just want to spotlight you. You're incredible. And so that's something that, and I'm just curious, maybe that's just the sort of nature of the groups that I was working with, but I find almost an imposter resistance to it as opposed to someone as a sort of unlikely barrier. But I'm curious if you guys are hearing that from your communities too.
I think that's common across all groups, right? I mean, even sometimes I do, like, I'll be like thinking like, huh, am I doing a good job today? Like, you know, you just never know. And so, and I think that goes back to building relationships with people. Like we've been talking about kind of this entire panel, but when you have a really close relationship with people and then you're reaching out, asking, you know, to spotlight them, you can really highlight, like you said, Laura, why what they're doing is so incredibly fabulous and help build them up, right? And how powerful is that to be able to do that for someone? And so I think that's really important that you have those relationships when you're reaching out to people, right? You have a foundation first. You're not just like randomly reaching out to people because you're trying to meet some quota of X amount of testimonials, or you need a certain amount of people for your new customer advisory board. You should really be thinking about why you're reaching out to that specific person and why they're a good match for what you're looking for. I think that's really important. And then you can balance, right, how much you're asking and then what they're receiving in return. I think that's important.
The flip side that I've seen from the imposter syndrome is almost an extreme altruism where they actually don't want to be recognized for the contributions that they've made, at least not publicly. I mean, a lot of times, you know, they want to hear thank you, of course, they want to be appreciated. But in some cases, I've had folks not want to be in the spotlight because they just do it because they enjoy it and they love helping people and they just want to, you know, kind of be in the background and blend. And that's been interesting too. In most cases, you know, usually I've managed to get to a degree to like, you know, one really awesome spotlight or something like that, where it's something you can reuse just because they are such, you know, pillars of the community. But at the same time, there are, again, that goes back to the relationship of knowing the person and knowing what their appetite is for that. And what, you know, maybe you have people who hate public speaking and are not going to speak on your behalf, but somebody's happy to, you know, do an interview off camera or something. So again, just getting to know your people and knowing, you know, what you're asking for and what fits best for them.
I love it. I'm like overall just feeling like it really is all about relationships, right? Whether it's like setting really thorough, clear expectations, getting to know the people that you're needing to like connect with and work with, whether it's your stakeholders or the members of your community, and listening twice as much as you are. Two ears, one mouth.
Is it two ears? Is that what you said?
I like the way you said it, Vicky.
Yes, that's the ratio.
But yeah, I think there were a lot of really, really incredible insights here. Vicky, Carrie, Laura, Melanie, does anybody have anything else? We do have 4 more minutes. So if anybody has anything they want to say, I was just going to thank you so much for your warmth and your wisdom. I feel like we all learned a ton. So thank you.
I have a question. I have a question for each person on this panel, including Casey and Grace. Just what is the problem you're dealing with now? What's the thing you're stuck at?
Oh, this is a good one. I can go first. So our community is new. We're like 3.5 months old. We have a very engaged group of members, like incredibly engaged, but we just don't have a ton of members. It's growing on the slower side, which is okay for me, but for my organization, we want to continue to grow that. So just been thinking through our strategy on how we really incentivize people to join our community. It's completely open too, right? So we have a ton of traffic coming. Obviously, we always know there's going to be a ton of consumers and lurkers, but really what's that hook to get people into the community? We've kind of figured out some of those things, but just driving more conversion there is, that's my angst right now. That's what I like keeps me up at night.
Good one, Mel. That's a good problem to solve. I think for me, something that I'm working with groups that I find, the problem that I find the most heartbreaking and most difficult is a database challenge. Because when we think about organizations who, I think of it as it's the beating heart of the body. If you need a heart transplant, if your arteries are blocked, this is not going to be good for you. And so we can't make other technology changes, whether it's a community or email or even your website, just the whole experience becomes impacted at the organizational level and the customer experience level. And so I think that for me, it connects back to community, but that's the hardest challenge. It's typically very expensive and it takes at least a year to change. So that's a really sort of slow moving freight train of a challenge for the organizations that I'm helping. And there's simply not an easy fix for that right now too.
I think my challenge of the moment there, although there are many, would probably be defining and aligning on what community actually is and means across the organization. Our organization is very large and our community is actually very old. So we are over a decade old and there has been a lot of iterations of it and a lot of folks have worked on it and it's evolved. And so it's really right now, I see it as my job to, how do I paint the picture for the future and can make it a consistent message that everybody can really rally behind?
Yeah. Over here, I mean, we're an executive recruiting firm. And so I think my like community at its core, in some senses, is our clients, but in another sense, is the incredible candidates that our clients are interested in who are not naturally incentivized to engage with the community of a recruiting agency when they're not actively looking for work, right? And so I think for me, the biggest challenge is making sure that I can consistently provide value, even when it's not in the time where they're updating their resumes and wanting to stay connected and both to us and the other members of our community who can always learn a lot from them. So try and figure out how to do that with content and events and getting back to in-person events with the pandemic opening up as it is. So it's been many conflating challenges in one. Awesome. Well, thank you. Yeah, Vicky, I was going to throw it back to you, but you are mentoring and consulting and not in that position right now, luckily. But yes, thank you all so much again for your time. It was an absolute delight to get to learn from each of you. And I hope that we get to connect again soon. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com.